This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Gabriel Gomez has the kind of life story that seems tailor-made for political primetime. He's the son of immigrants, graduated with merit from the United States Naval Academy, and then went on to extend his service as a platoon commander with the Navy SEALs. He then stepped into the private sector, earning a Harvard MBA and working as a principal at a major Boston private equity firm. Question is, can he parlay that personal success into a successful run for the U.S. Senate? Gabriel Gomez is a Republican candidate for the seat vacated by Secretary of State John Kerry, and he joins us now in the studio. Mr. Gomez, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
And listeners, if you have a question for Gabriel Gomez, your chance to call is now. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Well, I see that you're actually wearing a jacket that you probably received while you were a commissioned naval officer, and I want to start by talking for a minute or two about that impressive resume. Tell us, you're the son of Colombian immigrants, grew up in California. What first drew you to the Navy, though?
You know, my parents immigrated here a year before I was born. And when I was born, my mom didn't even know any English, so I learned Spanish first. And at a young age, you know, I saw how this country embraced my parents with open arms and really gave them a chance at the American dream, not just for themselves, but for their kids. And I really felt a strong desire to give back and to serve. And so I was drawn to serve my country, and I applied to the Naval Academy, and I got accepted.
Now, when you were young, did it, was it sort of part of your reality that you were the son of immigrants? I mean, did they talk to you about what it felt like for them to be in America?
I mean, a little bit, yeah. And I obviously, you know, learning Spanish first and then not learning English until I went to kindergarten was a differentiator. It was different than a lot of kids. But, you know, America embraced my parents so much that I thought that we integrated very well within all societies of where we lived. And it was just, I could see that my parents were happy. They made the right choice. And they were just excited that that their kids were going to have a lot of opportunity. They never would have dreamed that I would have been able to do all the things I've done. But it was really because they were here and they gave the opportunity. And now it's just their wildest dreams that their oldest son's running for the United States Senate.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if did they ever tell you any stories about, you know, whether or not it was important to them to be in America versus Colombia? And I'm only asking because, you know, I'm the child of immigrants, too, and I understand how these are people who've chosen to leave their country to come to the United States, and that's quite a formative example to grow up with. And I'm just wondering how that might have maybe influenced your political philosophy as you grew up and are running today for the U.S. Senate.
You know, it didn't really influence my political philosophy, but it did, you know, gave me the impression that this is one of the most selfless things that I think people could do. You know, my parents came here, all the rest of the family still in Colombia, and they decided, you know, they made a decision even after me and my brothers were born to not go back to Colombia because they thought obviously this was a better chance and a better opportunity, and they did it because of their kids, really. So to me, I've always been super fortunate that my parents put themselves, you know, behind their kids and put their kids first and did what they thought was best in their kids' interest.
Mm. See, I think that one might think that you, or actually, you know, I was going to say that one might think that America in the last election cycle has really proven itself ready for a candidate like you, you know, the son of immigrants, maybe not a person who adheres dogmatically to any particular philosophy. You've shown support for candidates on both sides of the aisle. But maybe the problem is that you're part of the wrong party.
Oh, no. Look, I am proud to be a Republican. I'm a fiscally conservative Republican. And I believe firmly in the Republican principles, which is, you know, greater personal responsibility, more personal freedom, and smaller, more effective government. And it's the same principles that my parents shared after they came here. And it's the same principles that I think that once we go out, and we've been going out throughout the whole state, and we espouse those and start talking to people in all different parts of Massachusetts, share the same philosophy, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or Independents. They share the same principles of the Republican Party, and that's why I'm a Republican, and I'm proud to be a Republican.
And so when you say that you're a new Republican, I mean, that's a phrase that you used when you first announced that you were going to make this run for Senate. What exactly did you mean then?
Well, first, I've never been in politics. I'm not a career politician. So, and I'm also a first-generation American, having learned English second, and I've served in the military. There's not a lot of Republicans that can say that, A, they're a first-generation American, B, that they learned English second, and that they haven't been career politicians for a long time, a good part of their life, and that they've served the military and have the private sector experience that I have. So I feel like I represent a new kind of Republican, but a very proud Republican and fiscal conservative.
Mm. Now, see, your greatest challenge right now, given that there's a primary coming up, is that you've got to convince your fellow Massachusetts Republicans that you're the man for them. And many of them have looked at the fact that you've shown support for both President Obama and Deval Patrick. And while you've donated to Mitt Romney's campaign, but then you also donated to Alan Kazee's campaign on the Democratic side when he ran for Senate, that cross-border support, they think kind of maybe belies the fact that while you say you're Republican, maybe your heart lies elsewhere.
Oh, no, my heart lies in the Republican Party. I'm proud to be a Republican. And, and that's my blood right now. If you look at the other candidates that I'm running against, they've all given to Democrats as well. And they've supported Democrats in their past. And first of all, I voted for John McCain in 2008, and I voted for Mitt Romney in 2012, and I'm proud of that. So there's no difference between, giving to President Obama in a primary in 2008 and the same things that my opponents have done as well.
Okay. One last question about this, then I'm going to move on, because I am a little confused by something. Because by, for example, donating to President Obama but voting for John McCain, aren't you sort of working against your own interests there? I mean, explain that to me. How does that work?
No, I mean, a friend of mine went to law school with President Obama, and he asked a bunch of his friends in town to donate to President Obama. So I made a small donation to President Obama, and I fully supported John McCain, and I voted for John McCain in 2008.
Listeners, I'm speaking with Gabriel Gomez. He's Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, and now's your chance to ask him a question if you'd like. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We got a tweet yesterday from Fernando Alvarez, who wanted us to ask you, how has being the son of immigrants shaped your position on immigration reform?
Look, I'm a first-generation American. I grew up in a valley of migrants in Washington State, and I mean, I'm finally heartened now that we have a bipartisan group of senators addressing immigration reform. And I'm with Marco Rubio on this where, I mean, the first and primary concern is you need to secure the border. And I think the second thing is that there should be a pathway to citizenship. Now, it can't be a pathway that is easy, but it also can't be a pathway that's impossible. And there needs to be certain steps. They need to pass a criminal background check first. If they don't do that, they should be sent home. And also, they need to learn the English language. They need to integrate within American society, and they need to embrace the idea of America. And also, if they serve in the military with honor, I think that's one of the pathways to citizenship. So I think I have a very unique experience having grown up as son of immigrants, having learned English second, and lived in a valley where it was heavily migrant, that I understand that 99.9% of the 12 million undocumented workers are just like you and I. They're very good people, and they came here because it's better than where they came from, and they want a chance at the American dream. And if they want to become citizens, then they need to integrate within American society and follow the steps.
So how does the sort of plan that you just outlined, how does that differ, if at all, from what President Obama has stated as his desire for immigration reform?
I think that the Group of Eight is on the right path. I think that with Senator Marco Rubio being one of the leaders on the Republican side, I think they're going to start coming to agreement with President Obama. And I hope that this is a very unique opportunity where you can actually get some kind of reform done on a bipartisan manner, which is going to be led hopefully by Marco Rubio on the Republican side, who I'm with on this.
Let's take a quick call. Sean's calling from Quincy. You're on the air, Sean.
Hi. Hi, Gabriel. First of all, thank you so much for your service. We need more people like you in Washington who have put on the uniform and served our country.
It was an honor to serve.
Well, my first question is, what do you, if any, plans do you have to reform entitlements like Social Security, Medicare, and generally any good plan?
Sean, you still with us? It looks like Sean wanted to ask you about what's your view on entitlement reform.
Sure. I'm for the balanced approach. I think we've addressed the revenue side with increasing the tax in the top 2% as well as the payroll tax for everybody. And I think we need to address the spending. I think we need to be, the first thing I would say on entitlements is that any seniors that are of the retirement age receiving Medicare or Social Security, or those approaching the retirement age, would have zero effect, zero change on their benefits that they receive. I think it's people of my generation and younger, where there are a lot of good ideas out there that have bipartisan support. And it's not that there's a lack of ideas, it's that there's a lack of courage. A couple of things that I would support, for instance, are means testing. I would argue that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates probably don't need all their benefits on Medicare. And I also think that a gradual increase in the retirement age for people of my generation and younger, not those receiving benefits or those approaching benefits. For instance, increasing it by a month per year for 24 years, you'd increase it for 2 years over a 24-year period. That's a gradual increase, and that'd have a significant impact on our deficits.
Some of your fellow Republicans would say that that's only a start and it doesn't happen fast enough. I mean, in the case of Medicare, Paul Ryan, his plan is way, way more aggressive than that. Basically, you know, he wants to create a voucherized Medicare program. Would you support that?
Look, I think one of the problems down in D.C. is that, you know, people think that things are too hard to do or they're too impossible. If I had taken that attitude my whole life, you know, as somebody who didn't even learn the English first, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone to the Naval Academy. I wouldn't have become an aircraft carrier pilot or taken the leap to become a Navy SEAL. I think you need to approach these things, no matter how difficult they are and how much pushback you get, you still need to have the leadership and try to push these things through.
So does that mean that you're in support of that idea, or you're open to that idea?
Look, there's a lot of parts to Congressman Ryan's plan. Now, I'll tell you what I do support in terms of vouchers. I think seniors should have more choice and more control over their Medicare. I think we need to have Medicare dollars go further. And I would be in support of something that follows those kind of principles.
Matt's calling from Braintree. You're on the air, Matt.
Hi, Gabriel. How are you?
Fine, sir.
First of all, I just want to say I'm very impressed, you know, from what I see on Facebook and social media. You're really all over the state and campaigning old school. But my question is about term limits. You know, we had two long-serving senators who've been there for so long, and now, you know, we have, you know, newer faces. How do you feel about term limits and kind of ending the lifelong politician in Washington?
You know, we put a 7-point plan out to reboot Congress a couple of weeks ago, and point number two was term limits. You know, the president's term limited to 2 terms. I think congressmen and senators should be term limited. I think it's kind of crazy that, you know, Congressman Markey's been in Congress for 37 years. He's been there since he started in Congress when I was playing Little League Baseball. I was in either 4th or 5th grade. I think the people enter politics for the right reason, but I think the longer you're down there, I think the more entrenched you get in your ideological positions. And I just think that there should be returning back to citizen servants. I think that people should have to come back after 2 terms in the Senate and live under the rules they passed and live with the people who they served, and more importantly, maybe work with the companies with the laws that they impacted.
Okay, I gotta ask you though, because I term limits can be very popular, and they come up very frequently as points that incoming congressmen or candidates running want to make. They haven't happened for a lot of reasons, because it's Congress itself that's going to have to make that action. But I also wonder, a lot of people say, hey, look, the downside to term limits is that what if that's the person people want to send back to represent them? I mean, you could say a lot of things about Ted Kennedy's career, but over that half century that he was in the Senate, people kept sending him back. They cast their votes for him. So why take away choice from people on Election Day?
Term limits has extremely broad support among the people of Massachusetts and the people of America. The only place that it's not popular is in area code 202. I would argue that there are a lot of qualified people just like myself, that would want to go down there and be citizen servants. I don't think there's a lack of qualified people to go down to D.C. I think the problem is that once you're down there for too long, you become entrenched, and it's hard to beat an incumbent. And it dissuades people from entering politics. And I think if you get rid of if you institute term limits, you get rid of a lot of the animosities down in D.C., which is creating a lot of dysfunction, a lot of gridlock, and a lot of failure. And you get rid of a lot of the problems that are caused down in D.C.
Is that really what's created the gridlock? Because one could say that even when we didn't have term limits, but a generation ago there was less animosity, more bipartisanship. That maybe it's, for example, the flood of money into politics and the hardline stances taken by both parties that's actually driven the divide, and not the fact that congressmen can be reelected for as many times as they choose, or people send them back for.
I honestly think that the root of it is that you get people that are down there for half or most of their career, and I think what you get is you get career politicians. And what we've heard on the campaign trail is people do not want to send another career politician down to D.C., somebody who spent a good part of the majority of their life in politics. They want to send somebody who has the private sector experience, who's had the military leadership, and who is not a career politician. That's what they need down in D.C., and hopefully we'll get more and more of them.
Right. So actually, on that note, on the private sector experience, that's something that I wanted to ask you about, because I've heard you say this before, that you know people want leadership experience, someone who's had leadership experience their whole life, who understands the private sector, who knows what it takes for companies to grow and be successful. And in the past, you've said that's why you think you're the best candidate. That combination of qualities or qualifications is something that Mitt Romney also very frequently said made him the best candidate. So are you a Mitt Romney Republican?
Look, every election is different. Every candidate is different. I'm a Gabriel Gomez Republican, and I'm a Gabriel Gomez candidate. So I'm proud of my background. I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of that I served in the military, and I'm proud of my private sector experience. And I think I offer a unique set of experiences, both personal and life, that would be very effective down in D.C.
Well, I was wondering, in the private sector experience, you were, until you began this campaign, you were a principal at Advent International, which is a major Boston private equity firm. I wonder, do you have an example of how a deal or a business that you purchased there did help create jobs or change a company?
Oh, absolutely. We invested in a company called Lululemon, which is a company based in Vancouver, B.C., back in December of 2005. And at that time, I believe Lululemon had less than a dozen stores in the U.S. Lululemon is now a public company that has a market cap of equity of almost $10 billion, and it has hundreds of stores in the United States. We created a lot of value in the United States, a lot of opportunity, and a lot of stores open with a lot of job opportunities. And it is significantly an American company compared to a Canadian company now.
But you also have to know that because of Mr. Romney's campaign, being part of the private equity world carries a lot of political baggage. I mean, there were many criticisms launched at him. I think from very valid sources that the ultimate goal of a private equity firm isn't necessarily building jobs, but rather maximizing return for investors, which at times may mean eliminating jobs. I mean, how do you handle that political baggage?
Or
liability, even?
The primary goal of private equity is to grow the retirement funds of their investors. And their investors are pension funds, endowments, and retirement systems for public servants. And for where I worked, a lot of those public servants are based right here in Massachusetts. They're firefighters, they're police officers, they're teachers. Our goal is to increase the retirement funds for these public servants who have given a good part of their public service to their communities.
And no doubt about that, but that essentially means maximizing the return on their investment, which doesn't always mean more jobs.
Our goal, as I said, is for public servants. These are public servants right here in Massachusetts. These are the police officers, the firefighters, the teachers that depend on private equity to help increase the retirement funds so they can have a comfortable retirement that they've earned through their public service to their communities. That's the goal of private equity. It's to grow the retirement funds for public servants.
So my last question in the last minute or so that we have is that the primary is coming up fast and furious.
Yes,
it's
sir.
On April 30th.
Yes, ma'am.
And the latest poll from WBUR has your opponent, Michael Sullivan, at 28% and you at 8%. What are you going to do or what can you do to, we've got about a minute here to go, to bridge that gap in less than 4 weeks?
I'm not a political pundit. I can't analyze polls or anything like that. But I can tell you that we are out every single day talking to people throughout the whole state, conveying our message, conveying our core Republican principles and our fiscal conservatism of greater personal responsibility, more personal freedom, and smaller, more effective government. And that's what's resonating. We're also the only candidate in the Republican primary that's on TV with ads. And we will continue to do that. And we're getting the word out. The message is spreading. Everywhere we go, people are enthusiastically signing up for the campaign, trying to help and volunteer. And I couldn't be more enthusiastic about where we stand right now.
Why do you think you're the best man for the job right now for Massachusetts?
I just think because what I've heard from people in Massachusetts is I'm not a career politician. They don't want to send another career politician down to D.C. They respect the fact that I was in the military and I was in the SEAL teams and I proudly served my country. And more importantly, I've got 16 years in the private sector helping companies grow and be successful. And we need to address the $16 trillion in debt and get companies to go back in hiring. And I know exactly what we need in D.C. to help those companies become more confident so they can hire again.
Well, Gabriel Gomez is a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. Gabriel Gomez, thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And listeners, if you've got more questions for him or comments, you know you can always let us know what you think on our website at radioboston.org. And you can also follow me if you'd like at Twitter. I'm MegnaWBUR. That's MegnaWBUR. And that's it for the show today. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll see you then.